extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Wow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Kalen Carr. Coming up, a big show. It's a Tuesday. There's been a lot of time for news to happen, to be announced, to hit the rumor mill. Kellen Acosta, blockbuster to LAFC. Albert Rusnak, officially a Sounder. That one is done. Transfer scuttlebutt. Young money, cash money. Houston splash at Dallas Might 2. Kasper Schabilko to the Fire. Paul Arriola to Club America. 18-month loans for everybody. Cole Bassett, Justin Shea. They're moving on, and season previews begin today with haikus and much more. Vancouver, Nashville SC, Columbus, and the Union. And we are once again ranking the top five players at every position, starting with goalkeeper. Anders is going to have a heyday in the chat telling us to speed it up, boys. What's up? What's up, Kalen? Been a long time. Finally seeing you.
Yeah, man. Good to see you guys. I feel like this is like the first day of preseason where I followed the, you know, all the off-season training regimens. I've done all of that. But then you like show up and it's the beep test the first day and you're like, I don't really know.
I'm not actually prepared for that. Like,
but I know I'm going to run it out. I'm going to go until I drop. And, overall, shortest offseason I think ever. But Wiebe, I've been enjoying all of your takes on Twitter as far as, yeah, I think you're trying to start your own sort of rumor mill to each different
somebody
club
pick
in MLS,
this stuff but. Up, you know? So, I need somebody to come after. We got MLSsoccer.com picking up the Josh Sargent's of Sporting Kansas City absolute BS that I was firing off over like a, you know, BLT at lunch one day. But look, it is that time of year. You're seeing guys, like what? We have the Pat Onstad, like, at the training ground. Like, it is a beautiful morning. The dew is on the ground and, you know, the sun is rising. Shot that I didn't think I'd get from Pat on Twitter, to be honest with you. We got, you know, we've got the Barnes, you know, those who have covered this league, watched this league, been around this league, know what I'm talking about. It's like 8 degrees in Philly and they're in the big turf, you know, facility, like the football field sized facility there. It is preseason. We're almost there. February 15th is less than a month away. That's when CCL starts and February 26th is opening day. So you better prepare yourself. We ran through a lot of news right there. Somehow, some way, we got to get to it and do these previews and do our goalkeeper stuff and do the mailbag. We will let you know how Anders deals with that.
Can I throw us off the rails quick, though?
Yeah, let's do it.
Kalen, where were you in a beep test ranking normally, and who was the best performance you've ever seen?
I've never lost a beep test in my professional or amateur career.
Wait. You played on teams. Now, when did the beep test start for you? Was this like, because I remember you, Wando and I, same PDL team, but Wando's a beep test legend, so I don't know. He's like, you know.
No, he wasn't PDL. We were club in high school, so we didn't do it in high school.
Gotcha.
So it began in college. So any teammate of mine that you've ever known I've played with,
you've beat them.
You know. If you look at him, you know.
Just what a flex.
Look him in the eyes. Like, did you beat Kalen Carr in the beep test?
Yeah.
Y'all
might have got more
try.
Playing time and money than me. You're not taking me down in this beep test.
Oh, man.
Unreal. I didn't know we had a Hall of Famer in
What's
our
the most unlikely beep test performance you've ever seen? Like, a guy that nobody expected to be any... You're like, this guy, we're going to be dragging him along. People are going to be behind him, pushing him to get him through this.
Well, I wouldn't say that. The one that's sticking out to me was... It's probably a lesser known beep test, but we're already off the rails, right?
Yeah, hell yeah.
When I had just retired, I went and helped on some content stuff with the U.S. national team when Jurgen Klinsmann was running January camp. And Christian Dean won the beep test, another Berkeley guy, so casually. I've never seen somebody win a beep test so casually. It was like the guy was jogging the entire time. It was incredible.
That's why this dude, 6'3". Could run for days, kept getting pulled out of retirement because everyone's like, we can get you ready. And if so, you're going to be amazing.
Have you seen him in a beep
Ray
test?
I think Ray Gattis should get a beep test exemption. I'm going to write a handwritten letter to Cincinnati. Plus, you know Ray's fit.
Yeah, like, you do. On. But I there can be no exemptions.
I hope Ray Gattis is coming back wearing 45 this year.
Everybody in Cincinnati's got to show. They got to be like, hey, we're here for this. Like, it's going to be a new era. I'm not, you know, Ray's got to be like, hey, this is an example setting moment. I am in for, I'm going to win this beep test. I'm the Kalen Carr of beep test participants.
With the Kalen. Tuck shirt.
Well, yeah. Did you see Herc Gomez's thread about Kai Kamara?
Oh, yeah.
Your PDL team got a little mention. You didn't get mentioned, but the rest of the PDL
was not
team
mentioned. I didn't catch a stray, but I didn't catch like a stray love either. Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Kalen's generation Adidas. Like, you know, you came out with hype. Kai's like, he's scratching and clawing. He's up here talking to Herc, you know, after work
in
the game.
No, I was not generation Adidas. I was not. I'm so old. I was almost Project 40. So it was like right on the cusp of like the switch of the era. But yeah, no. Congrats to Kai, Sierra Leone, still pulling for these guys. Amazing so far.
It's been wonderful to watch. All right, let's get into the show here, and we'll get to the news and the transfer news around MLS before jumping into your season previews. We're starting the season previews today. It's going to be the most packed in sort of scheduling we've ever done for these. So if you get frustrated that they're not long enough or whatever they might be, like, that's what the mailbag is for. Please tweet at us, email us, text us. We will answer questions. We will talk about what you want us to talk about. You just got to force us to do it. Before we get into the news, though, we are recording on a Tuesday, putting it out on a Tuesday. Normally, we're Monday, Thursday show, of course. Monday was Martin Luther King Jr. Day. I struggled a little bit yesterday, sort of trying to sift through, I don't know, all the things that get said by certain people and positions. And, you know, I hope you know what I'm talking about here. But what I will say about Martin Luther King Jr. Day is it's a good day to go back and read more than just the quotes that you see sort of bandied about, a good day to read about legacy, a good day to go think about what's happening in our own little space here. Black Players for Change, BPC, the diversity hiring policy that happened last year, then all the work that they've done in 2 years, which is just absolutely incredible. Like, from the ground up, they have built this thing that we all hope, and I know that they plan to make serious changes in North American soccer and the worlds that we live in. So go check out what BPC is doing. You can donate on their site. You can buy merchandise from them if you want to support them in that way. But I am really, really encouraged and also looking forward to what they do in 2022 after two incredible years. So go check them out. Best Alfonso Davies. I don't think we hit this on the last show, Dave, but I know you, being part Canadian yourself, yeah, would have forced us to do so. Out for 4 weeks with heart inflammation following the COVID diagnosis. So it looks to be missing those World Cup qualifiers, which is a bummer for those of us that were looking forward to two full-strength teams kind of going head-to-head in Hamilton. But ultimately, it's all about health. We wish the best for Alfonso Davies, and whenever he gets back, he will still be arguably the best left back in the world and a great, great personality as well. Let's talk Kellen Acosta at LAFC. So you just switch him, man. You just Mark Anthony Kay first, then you're like, you know, let's just move him back the other way. So Mark Anthony Kay goes last year from LAFC to the Rapids, and then Kellen Acosta just switches places with him for basically the same price tag, 1.1 in GAM for Kellen. It was 1 million in GAM for Mark Anthony Kay last year in the middle of the season, plus an international roster spot, which we know to be basically a 250K price tag around these points, and a first round draft pick, which they then traded for 1.25. In GAM, so it's like a $25,000 GAM difference between the two. Kalen, what do you think? This is interesting. It's just back and forth.
I think they could have just made this a lot easier if they just would have just traded the play.
Yeah. One press release.
But they wanted it some time to play together. And I think this is a really good move for LAFC. I mean, when you look at some of the moves, we'll get to them, but they had big question marks going into this. Obviously, no manager, and then Trundolo comes in, but I think the core of this LAFC and the best LAFC team, when we've seen them at their best, yes, Vela, and, you know, they have all these weapons on the wings and up top, but it's really been that core center midfield that's made them special. And I think that fell down, and now it's kind of building back up in a different way. So you see Cifuentes, you'll see Acosta, you'll see Blessing, and then they brought in Ilya Sanchez as well. So I think, you know, you can start to see how those pieces begin to fit together and give them some options to kind of like rebuild from the center of the pitch and build out from that core.
What did you think of Kellen's comments afterwards? Because he's saying, look, he had said a while back, I think Europe is where I'd like to be if I'm having a next move to stay with the U.S. national team. And he had said, like, there were offers for me from Europe. Colorado had said, no, there weren't. We didn't have that. We had a Reading offer like a year and a half ago, but it wasn't making sense at the time. Like, as usual, these things come down to usually to money. Like, they're negotiating a new contract. They're not on the same terms. And therefore, a deal like this happens. And for the Rapids, it makes sense. Like, the most you can get in allocation money inside the league is basically around that million number. for an outgoing transfer, no matter what you sell them for, essentially, on the GAM recoup. But if you trade them in the league, they could get up to 1.5. So you can certainly understand from their perspective, we had an offer. It's a good offer. We took the offer. Like, he's staying in the conference. That's not great, but we already did business with them. Like, Mark Anthony Kay stayed in the conference, and I guess it worked out better for the Rapids than it did LAFC. What does this mean for the Rapids from your point of view, Dave?
I think for the Rapids, I could tell you today that Kellen Costa may not have been a starter going into the season. So on top of the contract issue, like, he's a dispensable player for them. Maybe it would be at left wing back, which is not his proper position. So it makes sense to take the trade. I think the other piece of the sale to Reading was FC Dallas still had a bid on a percentage of that sale. So again, you're talking about that million cap in terms of what you can get in for the transfer, plus then breaking it up amongst two teams. And then you trade him inside the league and you're able to get more value for him. So I think it makes a ton of sense for Colorado. I don't know that there's like a huge danger in getting rid of him. It feels like there are pieces in Colorado to be able to cover for him and fill in for him, as good of a player as Kellen Acosta is. And I don't think that's a knock on him in any way. I just think you look at some teams in MLS and there's depth in places, and in a salary cap league, it's tough to really manage depth. Like, you, those are almost assets that you have to give away to be able to improve your squad. And so I think this one makes sense for all parties involved. And I think Kellen's going to be an influential piece to LAFC, similar to how he was when he got to Colorado. When he got to Colorado, he wasn't really playing a pure anything, right? He was a creative force. He was an eight. He was a six. And he kind of, just his natural ability, his soccer IQ, was able to help raise the level for Colorado. I think that's similar in LAFC. He's not a natural six if he's playing alongside Cifuentes, if he's playing alongside Blessing. They have Gianella as well. But I think in general, he's a high-level soccer player with good experience in this league. He's on the national team as well. And I think that raises the floor for an LAFC team that has a ton of question marks.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a good move for both sides. And it's just a little weird because they'd already done it like 8 months before. But Kellen Acosta, LAFC, Colorado Rapids have made some signings to reinforce, because Cole Bassett's on his way to the Netherlands, to Feyenoord, it seems, on an 18-month loan. So that's where they have the Max kid in from Brazil, the attacking midfielder they bring in. You have Mayaka, who basically didn't impact this team last year, was a top-three pick. You went out and got Mo Omar. Maybe he can be depth to that sixth spot. Jack Price is still around, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe Brian Acosta they sign off reentry, if we ever hear any news on that one. But yeah, I think it's a win for both teams. It's a big win for the Sounders, what officially went down this last week. Albert Rusnak, DP deal for them. It is done. It sounds like Alex Roldan is back on a 3-year deal. Jeremiah Oshan has been killing the breaking news. Sandra Hart, they're saying Montero is going to return. Oshan reporting that Rui Diaz signed a 3-year extension. Nico Moreno, same. Sandra Hart, again, killing it, saying that Jao Paulo has a 3-year extension, basically through 24. And to me, it feels like all of this is the Sounders saying, okay, we have our core. Here are our guys, and maybe Nico Lodero is the only sort of question mark in there just because of health. But here are our guys through 2024. We are going to expect to be able to win championships, MLS Cups, maybe even CCL, TBD, how they perform there, Open Cups, etc., through 24 with this group. It seems like a pretty good bet to me.
Yeah, and haven't you also seen when MLS players are maybe in other markets, and even when they're maybe not getting the best out of them or not having the best moment of their career, you know, I think of Benazee, Kellen Rowe, you know, different players that have come over and they take it up another level. Well,
Shane O'Neill.
Rusnak is a guy that I think, like, you know, we've been seeing as, you know, sort of a right on that edge of best 11, or, you know, maybe second team best 11. I can't remember our rating.
Well, we had five, last so year, but... dig through those.
Okay. Yeah, we did a lot. Everybody, yeah.
Everybody gets on a best 11. Like, oh, my God.
But, like, if you think about it, if he's in a better system or in this Sounder system, you know, there might be more for him. And I think just at like the age of, well, he's only like 26 or something.
27. I mean, he's like right in the middle of his prime, basically.
Yeah. And I just think, like, sometimes the Sounders, when you look at it, you know, they have the sort of width, you know, they have the striker. And then sometimes I think in that underneath spot, they've sort of that connecting the dots that maybe hasn't quite been there. Chris Roldan, I think, has done a good job in that role at times, but he plays in a different way where he's very mobile and goes out to the corners himself and kind of like tucks in and finds those spaces. And it's kind of all action everywhere, where I think Rusnak is not going to just like sit there. He can sort of drift to the wings a little bit also, but I think he's just more of the connecting piece that, can get in and around the top of the box and then look for something a little bit that maybe we haven't seen as much from them, where it's 1-2s. We see a lot of it from the wings. But having that little combination play in and around the box, that sort of cleverness around it, and then finishing goals and getting assists himself.
I think he's going to be better. I think even if his numbers aren't the same, like went double-double in 34 games played, if you are the Sounders and you see a 10 flex wing, just generally good attacker in MLS who has stayed healthy every year.
Well, he can't be a wing.
Well,
because apparently the reason he didn't stay in Salt Lake was because he doesn't want to play out wide. So you do have some necessity in how you have to play him, which
does
is
he,
fine.
Does he not want to play out wide, or does he not want to play out wide for Real Salt Lake?
I don't know. He said that was a big reason why he chose Seattle.
Okay.
Was because he was told that he would play the role that he thinks he's at his best. Now, I think winning changes everything for people, right? And you could say, oh, I care about this thing. And then if you make a run to MLS Cup and you're playing on the wing, your life changes. I think that's fair to say. But just throwing it out there, Weeby, you don't have as much flexibility as you said.
That's fine. I don't know. He's going to get into a different ecosystem. We had a lot of people hitting us up being like, yeah, but it seemed like he caused problems at Real Salt Lake. And I'm like, I don't know. It seemed like that was a really difficult situation for everybody. I think you put him into this Sounders group, like you were saying, Kalen. He is not like... There are going to be a lot of people over him on the totem pole, so to speak. He's not going to have that much pressure to do more, to be more. Like, dude, just go out and play with, like, I'm not going to sugarcoat it here, better players than you had around you before. If you look at this Sounders 11, at least on paper, that they can run out there, when you're talking about either internationals, all-stars, or, like, best 11 players at every position, every single position. Jordan Morris, he wasn't even an influence last year. He's back, fully healthy. Rui Diaz is back. Lodeiro is just like a luxury guy. Like, how much can we get out of Nico Lodeiro? Like, it probably doesn't change our ceiling as much as it would for any other team in this league. It's pretty incredible what they've built.
Can you explain to me how this happened? Like, is he just a free agent?
He's a free agent.
Seattle couldn't pay him as much as RSL could max out, but they can still make him a designated player. It sounds like João Paulo has been dropped out of a designated player.
He was always a contract. He was always a TAM flex guy, basically based on his transfer fee. So the Sounders just went out and via free agency. I really believe that this is like probably the beginning of free agency being a major influencer of like championship ambition within MLS. Like you can change your fate via free agency, and that might have not been the case. It wasn't the case before. I don't know why I'm saying might.
Now, if you're a Seattle fan, I think you have to be ready to accept the fact that Nico Lodeiro might never play for you again. I don't think you make this move if you think you're going to have a Nico Lodeiro at his level and his fitness over the course of this year. But they've put themselves in a situation where they could still win MLS Cup if that's not the case.
It's a good move. It's a really good move. We'll see. And look, there might be a world down the line, the shifting sands of where like the TAM DP line sits, where Albert Rusnak might fall under that. We don't know. TBD. Right now, he's a DP, but he might be close. We'll have to see about that one. Here's some other news around MLS. Multiple bids from Club America with other MLS clubs interested, including reportedly the Galaxy, for Paul Areola. He says he wants to go. He's pushing this one pretty hard. Meanwhile, in D.C., Edison Flores had to have an MRI on his knee in Peru. Oh, God, not again. Yeah. Hopefully, everything's okay with that one. Then contract negotiations are ongoing between D.C. and Andy Nahar. We've talked about Areola. I think, Dave, this has been sort of a pet take of yours. Like, Gressel and Areola on the same roster might not be the best cap math.
Yeah, and the other pieces they have. I just think for D.C., it's a win if you can get a transfer for him. Now, it sounds like the Club America deal is a loan with an option to buy, is what the rumors have been out there as. But if you can get a fee for that, you also open up the DP spot, and they have open DP spots already. I think Paul Areola is a special player. I think he's been a really good piece for that club, and I think he's helped them sort of manage through some ups and downs over the last few years. But I do think for the ceiling this team can reach, I don't think Paul Areola is a part of that roster. And so if you can get out of this deal with these moves, which is also, by the way, a really interesting thing that we're starting to see. We talked about this a little bit with Eddie Atuesta being sold to Brazil, but part of entering the transfer market in Mexico and South America at the level MLS is now at is you can get off contracts that you don't want to be on. Look at Soteldo. Look at the rumors around Brian Rodriguez and Barco. And now here with Paul Arriola, MLS has entered into a different conversation in the global market, and it changes your ability to be able to move contracts around, especially with the limits that DPs have. But I just think for DC United, while he fits the system, you have pieces already that can do similar things to Paul Arriola. Why would you not use a DP in a different way?
Barco and Brown Rodriguez, you mentioned their rumors that they could go to Brazil on loan, opening up spots that Atlanta needs to get Thiago Almada in, and LAFC would sure like to use perhaps elsewhere. How good, I know, Kalen, you and I, you know, we bond on our Instagram scouting. Really, I'm not sure who does that better than us, but I need some emoji hieroglyphic translation from you. Tati Castellanos tweeted at 2:02 p.m. January 17th, 2022 from his iPhone. Eyes emoji, sands of time hourglass emoji. How would you interpret that?
That's deep, man. I mean, I don't know if it's like a commentary on just like the state of the world right now or the transfer market, maybe both. I don't know, but I feel like for him, it is time. It's time for him to make that move, right?
Like, yeah. So you did, you just hit it. Like, you know, someday they're going to be digging back through the archives of Twitter, like, you know, 2000 years from now. And it's going to be the modern day hieroglyphic thing. Like, what did Tati Castellanos mean? Eyes, sands of time. Don't know. Let's get some
context.
I did
see him working out in a gym with a guy that I play men's league with here. So on Instagram. So I would say he's staying fit.
there it is.
It's not a Twitter thing.
There you have it. There you have it, folks. Yeah. It's on the gram. Kasper Schabilko.
He's reporting from the field.
A lot of reporting around him right now. And I saw some quotes, and I don't know if they're actually from Kasper. Who knows? Where he's saying, I want to take this move because apparently the Fire are in for him.
Did you see the quotes in Polish? Did you translate yourself, or did you go through someone else?
Nah, yeah, you know, Google Translate. It's a good friend of mine. So, yeah, I mean, look, we're just going to say what's been reported. I don't know what's official, what's real. Just that there's an offer maybe on the table, or at least they're sniffing around for him, and he's saying there's more contract stability for me in Chicago. I could have more guaranteed years. Like, let's just tackle the side of not even the union side, because we'll get to them in the previews. For the Fire, would Kasper Schabilko, Dave, be a good number nine, a good interleague move for them?
I think Kasper Schabilko is a high-level center forward in this league. I understand that he's gone in hot and cold streaks as a finisher, but I think he does a ton of things for your team. I think he's a good creative force to play through. He can stretch the field if that's a scenario that you end up in, and he seems to understand how to press and help lead the team defensively from the front. There's no team in MLS to me that isn't better with him on their roster. Is he a star number nine who's going to lead you offensively? No. But Chicago is starting from a pretty low level right now, and he's a more reliable pickup than the ones they've made over the last few years. So I think for either of these teams, he's a positive on their roster, and I think he's a loss for Philly if they – whatever the offer is. I don't think Philly's really going to go out and use the money at a level that
Julian Carranza, bro.
So that's what you're going to rely on.
Yeah, they already pulled the Philly move. Like, they got their.
But you're going to rely on a guy who's never scored in his life, not in his MLS career, right? Because he's young, in his life, and I think that's a dangerous way for Philly to go into the season.
I think Julian Carranza scored in his life, but we'll talk more about the Union here in a little bit. Some news around Adam Buksa and the Revs. Taylor Twellman tweets that the Revs went anywhere from 10 to 15 mil for Buksa. But guaranteed money is crucial, which they're not getting right now for Sebe. So TBD on him. I said it, Cole Bassett to Feyenoord on an 18-month deal. Love that move for Cole Bassett. Justin Shea to Hoffenheim on an 18-month loan deal. Seems like a good move for him as well. What's up with the 18-month loan deal? I'll kind of explain, I guess, how I see it right now. Whether you see it with James Sands or Bassett or whatever, I think it's MLS Club saying, hey, right now the guaranteed money that we're getting from what is a depressed market in Europe, it does not meet our valuation. But we think once you see our guy in the building with a purchase option at the end of 18 months that we like and a new contract for that player, so if it doesn't work out, they're just right back with us and we're, you know, we got a great player again. It's an opportunity to sort of use another club to help drive up the value of your asset, whether it be for that particular club or another club over there by putting them in not just in the shop window, but, you know, playing in Europe. That's the sort of.
And also 18 months because the MLS and European seasons are not on the same timeline.
Yeah.
So 18 months get you to the end of next season. You're kind of in between. Do we do 6 months or 18. 12 doesn't totally make sense because the player would enter in the middle of a season and then leave in the middle of the season.
Yeah, this is just MLS trying to establish the market. Now, there are certain players that have been sold for a lot of money. We've seen recently, obviously, Tejan and Darryl and Pepe, etc. But there is this other group of players that MLS is trying to drive value in, like the Sam Vines.
But also, Darryl did the loan, right?
Yeah, he did the loan. Yeah.
Brought the price up, you know, so I think ultimately when you start seeing some of that proof of concept too, it's going to take, I think before there was this idea that sending a guy on loan was going to be a risk. And yes, there is always some risk to that loan, but also there's on the other side of it, there is proving to be some significant reward as well. And like you said, depending on the market, that dictates a lot of it. So I think, you know, this one makes a lot of sense in 18 months. Yeah, I think that's plenty of time, and you have some security for there where you know that if you're, as from the player's perspective, that you have some time to settle and you're not going to be judged in 6 months. It just would be too quick to try to adapt.
And you have a new contract. So that helps too. That's a good thing. All right, let's talk about signings. Record transfer fee, Houston Dynamo, Ted Siegel following through. Sebastian Ferreira,
Dynamo
striker out of Paraguay, Club Libertad. Signs with the record transfer fee. There's a lot of different numbers out there between about 4.5 and 6 million. He scored a lot of goals for Libertad. I mean, I think 17 2 years ago, 10 this most recent season. He scored about 18 goals in a stint with Morelia in Mexico. Before that, he's 23 years old. This is good. I like this, Kalen.
Goals, baby, goals. Yeah, like Houston needs goals. I mean, I've been seeing just the initial reaction from fans. Like, people are excited about this. And I think it shows Siegel came in and the idea was, okay, wait a little bit. We need to really build. And then Onstad came on and was like, yeah, we'd like to make a move. But like, now you're seeing actual moves. You're seeing actual ambition. And I think quality, right? Like, that's a big spend. And I think a good age. 23 years old, a lot of quality there. So I expect this to actually hit. And I'm excited about the Dynamo and kind of some of the steps they're taking because they're backing up some of the words that we're hearing or have heard for a while, but now are seeing like, okay, we're ready, or like there's still going to be moves to be made. And I think this is still a longer project. But we've also seen at times teams make significant jumps, and finding one piece like this, especially in the place that it comes, I think is big.
Can I just ask this? How do you feel about the Sporting Kansas City Trojan horse being moved into Houston? I mean, now you got Paulo, you've got Jimmy. Like, these guys were mortal enemies for many a year. Yes. How do we know? Well, how do we know their intentions are true? How do we know? And Pat's like, hey, bring it in. That's
Benny now.
That's a beautiful horse.
Benny is now the SKC 2 coach with Ike as the assistant. And I'm like, if these guys come next, I tell you what. I'm actually okay with it, surprisingly. I just think, for me, playing against those Sporting Kansas City teams, there was so much respect. And I think some of it is like that mentality that they had and the quality that they had. And so, and I also have a ton of respect for Peter Vermees. So I think people that kind of come from that coaching tree, we've seen Bob Bradley's coaching tree, Bruce Arena's coaching tree, like go and have real success in other places. And I think Peter Vermees, if there's going to be coaches coming off of his tree as well, and I think there probably are.
This is really the start, I think.
I would be. Yeah, I think this, like, he's a bit younger. So I think seeing some people coming through that system and coming through Sporting Kansas City, even if it's coming to Houston, man, we just want to win. We just want to win and reestablish a culture of our own. And everything I've heard from Paulo so far has been really positive towards that.
We have Anders hitting the alarm bell right now. So I'm going to throw Alan Velasco to you. Dave, Argentine striker, 19 years old, I think, from Independiente, a big, big prospect in Argentina, apparently close to a move to FC Dallas for, again, in that range, like, sounds like $6, $7 million. What do you think? This is what we've asked from them, maybe more established players as well, but this is, spend money, go be ambitious.
Yeah, and I think Dallas had an idea of it last year with Freddie Vargas and O'Brien of saying, like, we're going to go sign the next Pepe and the next Jesus Ferreira, because your academy can't continue to churn out those players at that speed. So if you are making money, you still also have to replace those guys. And so this kind of feels like an in-between move of, you'd hope as an Argentine U17 international and a guy who's played a ton now at the pro level, he'd be able to make a difference on your first team while also having sell-on value down the road for an FC Dallas team that has now established that market, as you talked about with the loans, that clubs overseas trust the players coming out of their system. And so it sort of feels like that in between that FC Dallas is trying to hit. And I think for Dallas fans, they're just looking for anything right now. This is a team that literally outside of the draft has not made moves yet and has lost a ton of talent over the last 18 months to 2 years. And so they have to start refilling.
This would be a left winger, it seems. I just want to, transfer market's not everything, but they have the valuation at $13 million. That tells you sort of where he sits in world hierarchy. This feels to me like they're trying to do a Miguel Almirón. Like they've got the model with their homegrowns, and they've also sold a ton of other guys too, by the way, that aren't homegrown, whether it be like, you know, Grueso on down. There's like five or six guys that they've moved on. This would feel like, hey, we're trying
Annabelle
to do the, hey, there it is. Trying to do like the Miguel Almirón thing. Like this guy for a
but
couple
Miguel
years.
Miguel Almirón was an MVP.
Sure,
when he
but
came
but Miguel Almirón
league.
Was an $8 million player out of Argentina who was really well regarded. I don't think anybody said he's going to be an MVP. He became one. And then he became a $27 million player.
At 22, coming into this league, he was more of a known entity than this. This is a 22 under 22 signing, right? With those players, there's been more risk, like Santiago Moreno we saw play well for Portland. There's less guarantee, but more risk in those players.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that's fair. Let's keep it rolling. More U22 Young Money, Tom Bogert, who you have to be following at Tom Bogert. Scooped this one up. Portland Timbers and Estudiantes reach agreement, he says, per sources, for Argentine youth international defensive midfielder David Ayala. $2.6 million plus add-ons when it's done. Sell-on percentage. Ayala is 19. He has 32 first-team appearances. He's been with the Argentine U17s for a long time. I think Diego Chara got a new deal as well in Portland, and they're saying they're going to use their other U22 spot too. So TBD on what they do. Some other quick news to run down before we get started on those previews. Charlotte sold Riley McGree to Burrow. I will forever call them Burrow, never Middlesbrough, always with the B. Inter Miami busy. Damian Lowe, that seems
Let's
like a
go,
good
Damian
signing.
Lowe.
I like that signing. Jamaica International, he was with the Sounders back in the day. That's a good center back signing for them. Leonardo Campana, they signed. He's a forward, I think out of Ecuador. He had gone to Wolves and bounced around on loan, but he's sort of like, hey, we'll see. 24-year-old Swedish center back, right back, Christopher McVay. He's a Sweden native of American descent, is what I read. I don't know what that means, but Pato re-signs with Orlando City. Hooray! Comeback Player of the Year campaign begins now. Sporting Kansas City signed a 21-year-old Belgian left back. RSL signed 14-year-old Axel Kai. He's 6'4". He's a striker. He was the youngest professional appearance ever last year for RL Monarchs. He is 14 years old in 15 days when he signed this deal. That is the youngest signing in MLS history. He broke Freddie Adu's record, which had been 18 years running there. And he played pro at 13 years, 8 months, and 9 days. 13 years.
He's a great example of RSL for it working with the residency of a guy who maybe needed to leave home, needed some structure in his life, needed someone to sort of fill in where family
needed some structure in his life. This kid is 13. What is structure in your life at 13?
Like regular meals,
like,
and wake
like
up
cereal?
And go to sleep time and all that stuff. So it's been really huge for him to be at RSL, and he destroyed MLS Next last year. And so I know there's a ton of excitement and trained with the Monarchs throughout, which another piece of why it works for RSL is that they don't have to train with the first team to get a pro deal. And so they signed 5 homegrowns, Jude Wellings as well, who's a really good young player, youth national team guy. So RSL, I think, continuing to like sort of go down that road. And we've heard it from Blitzer that they kind of want to.
Anders in the chat. Can't wait until he signs with the Sounders as a free agent in 4 years. What a terrible person. What a horrible person.
That's shocking.
Really just. All right, let's do it. These are our season previews, folks. We have 28 to get through. That's a lot. We are starting earlier than we have ever started before. And we are going to do the same format we did last year. So you'll sort of learn it as we go. I think it'll be pretty easy for you. You remember that I wrote some haikus in 2021. I enjoyed those. I don't know if you guys enjoyed those. I don't know if anybody else out there enjoyed them, but because I enjoyed them, we're doing them again, and that's how we're starting. And we're giving the Vancouver Whitecaps, normally at the bottom of the alphabetical order and normally at the bottom of the standings order, a go to start this season. Andiamo. Here is our haiku from 2021. A 10 is one thing. How about some consistency? No playoffs? Then what? Well, we found out the then what. They changed coaches, obviously. Vanni Sartini was the interim. Then he was the permanent because he made the playoffs. And in 2022, our haiku is this. In Vanny we trust. Andiamo ragazzi. Pave the streets in gold. Hmm?
Oh.
Gold or gold?
Gold. Gold. Okay. G-A-U-L-D.
That's good.
You like that?
I think that's good. Yeah. You're starting off like, this is strong. Uh-huh.
So this is like a call for, you know, I feel there's emotions that go with these. This is a call for that next step from Vancouver. Like, we got the vibe. The vibe check is there. And Vanny, we trust. Andiamo ragazzi. We are together. We understand what is asked of us tactically and as a group.
Ragazzi now, means together?
It's boys, basically. It's like, you know, your boys. Like, let's go, boys.
You don't even need to know. You don't need to know what it means. You just
Yeah, vibes. Exactly. Yeah. You just pound the table and scream it. And then pave the streets in gold. Like, they have this new level they can reach. And Ryan Gold is such a good part. And God knows I had to pun that. White and gold. Yeah,
we got that part.
You got the pun. All right, key signings. Vanni Sartini as a permanent coach. But they haven't made a ton of moves. Tristan Blackman in that back line is the other key signing. It sounds like Bikel is going to be out. He just did not fit with the system. He barely played under Sartini. And so he's probably going to be in Europe. They're saying Serie B for him, but that should happen pretty soon. On the signing front, not a ton. Does that worry you at all, Dave, or is that okay?
No, I think this is a team. They brought in Florian Youngworth. They brought in Brian White. They brought in Ryan Gold throughout the course of last year, and Pedro Vite as well, who we'll talk about. They made their moves already. Like, this is a team that's fairly established. And what I love from hearing from Axel Schuster over the course of this offseason is not that they think the roster is done, but they feel like they're in a place where they can wait for the right moves. And that's where MLS teams are able to be successful, is having your core, having your spine that can win, and then being able to wait to see, is there an Inter-Miami that has to offload a player? Is there a player who's out of contract overseas? So that's where you can start to be successful. And they waited on Ryan Gold. It worked for them. They were able to make the playoffs. And now I think it's a team that has most of that structure in place.
Star spotlight, Ryan Gold. Surprise, surprise. We'll talk about Brian White in a second. Kalen, what were your impressions of Ryan Gold last year? What do you think he is / can be in 2022?
Well, I think he fits their style of play, especially. I mean, when you look at this team, just really athletic, dynamic, can kind of get out and kind of use that pace and energy on the break. And, you know, he also just has a knack for getting in the box, either late arriving runs or, you know, scored goals with his head, with his feet. Like, he's a very versatile player. And I think he gave him a little bit of personality too, where they did kind of outside, I think, of Brian White. You need more weapons coming into the box. And I think Brian White, we saw in the playoffs, there would be a lot of attention focused on him. And so when teams and center backs and you know, teams begin to game plan for him, because I think he kind of came on in a big way when he came in for Vancouver, you really need that second option. You really need somebody to be able to get into the box and finish the action as well. And I think Ryan Gold is definitely high on that list as far as a player that I think we've seen some really good stuff from, but then can he be consistently like pushing forward from year to year and play an even bigger role this year?
If Ryan Gold follows the David Goss theorem on foreign players being better as they get,
we've branded this brilliantly.
Whoo, man, we might be talking MVP candidate. We're talking 4 goals, 6 assists last year, and you know, under 20 appearances. So you could almost double that. We're talking about a big season.
As they were desperate, made a coaching change, made a system change, and made this big run. There is some element of like, okay, was that magic that they had? You know, how much of there is that? I think there is more personally. And when you think about Gold, you kind of said it there, Kalen, the perfect complement to White, to Dahomey, to Caicedo, like whether it be that first ball to get them out in the break and then following or otherwise, like he just has. He fits. He seems to really fit. Maxime Crépeau was a shout here, and we'll talk about him in the top 5 goalkeeper list that we'll put out here in a little bit. But 22 under 22, the player to watch. The only real like candidate here that fits the definition, which is under 22, I think by the final day of the season, is Pedro Vite, who we haven't seen a ton for, but has a pretty good resume as a prospect. I would throw Kyle Alexandre in this one, even though he is not 22 under 22 eligible. He is on the brink there, and we barely saw him last year, and what we saw was very good. So he could be almost like a new signing. Javane Brown's a little older. He did get a new deal, though.
Okay.
So congratulations to Javane Brown, one of 2 big standouts from the Super Draft. Got a new deal. we assume will be the right back for this team. Anybody you're watching, anybody you are focused on in this sort of like young player space, because we don't have a ton of candidates who truly meet the definition here?
Well, I just think you look at Vitae, and I think you look at Dyber Caicedo as well, both 22 under 22 signings. And that's where you look at a team where they didn't have to make changes because there's room for improvement internally. If those two, and Kyle Alexandre as well, whether he's healthy and then performs, they have the ability to take this club to another level. And so I think you're looking at a team last year that was able to figure out defensively their shape over the end of the year. They went five in the back. Youngworth was a good piece for that. They have a few different options now at the wide center back spots, bringing in Blackman. And Maxime Crépeau was arguably the best goalkeeper in the league last year. So you're able to build off that now in how are you a dangerous offensive team? And it besides in transition and besides pressing, what can you do in possession? And that's where you look at Vite, a guy that they thought was going to be the number 10 originally when they were going to bring him in. And now he can come off the bench. He can find his spot, whether it's out wide. Do they change the shape a little and go back to the 4-2-3-1 that they were playing before Sartini found the five-man back line? And then you look at Caicedo, who as a 22 under 22 signing was supposed to be the offensive fulcrum of this team. And I don't think he had a bad year last year, but they found their best form without him in the starting lineup.
He's hurt. He was hurt.
And then he didn't get back in. And Dahomey remained the starter, and that's fine. If those guys can give you improvement now, though, and add to what you can do in possession, now you're looking at a Vancouver team that can consistently get results and can start to push for a top four seed.
Here's our mailbag question from the Designated Players podcast. Was Brian White's breakout season a one-off, or can he repeat what he did in 2021 in 2022, Kalen? Here are the stats. 12 goals, 5 assists, and a little under 2,000 minutes for the Whitecaps. His previous best before that had been 9 goals, 2 assists in 2019 for the Red Bulls and about 1,300 minutes.
Okay. I wasn't listening super close to the minutes, but those sounded close.
Yeah. It's basically, okay, is he, for you, is he a double-digit scorer this year slash, you know, would he score more than the 12 goals he had last year? Like, do you expect that of him? Is that what should be expected?
I think so. I think from, you know, the Red Bull stats as well, like, that's a pretty good return based on the amount of minutes that you're playing. And he wasn't a consistent starter for
But how many minutes was he playing?
What do you mean?
I'm just messing with you because you spaced through that.
Oh, 1,300? I think it was 1,300.
There it is, bingo. Yeah, see, you know more than you let on.
Yeah, I just got to play it cool. I think he definitely can, and I think the system suits him. I think it is a place that's going to get balls in the box. They're going to run. They're going to try to score goals. They're not going to sit back or play defensive-minded. Like, they want to be aggressive, and his style of physicality and, like, his skill set translates well up there. So I really think, especially with the dynamic pieces around him, like, they stretch you in all different kinds of directions, and then you suddenly have Brian White coming into the box. Now that, I like I mentioned, it got a little bit tighter in the playoffs, and I think that was difficult for them. I mean, Sporting Kansas City really sort of sat back and clogged and said, you're not going to get out and transition against us, and we don't think you're going to hurt us otherwise. And they came and actually transitioned against them. So I think this Blackman signing is actually really interesting to me, because he has been in a system at LAFC that has asked a lot of their center backs, and he hasn't found maybe the consistency yet to be able to do that, but he has the athleticism to be able to put out a fire, or when you do get left in those individual battles where you have to defend in transition, I think he can do that. It's just, can he actually be leaned on in a bigger way in Sartini's system to be able to do it? But I do think Brian White, back to the original question, can continue that run of form. I think he's durable. He hasn't had a lot of injuries in his career. He's the right age. He's in a place that I don't think has... You know, he's got Cavallini, but I don't see him pressuring him too big. Maybe we'll get to that.
No, we're about to.
But I think this is his number 9 spot right now, and he earned it based on his play.
Oh, that's can a good question then.
Can I throw something out there before we get to Cavallini?
Sure.
I don't understand the Tristan Blackman trade. And I agree with everything Kalen said, and I think he can be good, and I understand valuing domestic players. It didn't feel like a position of need for this team. And $500,000 in allocation feels like a lot for a guy who's not a starter. And so you look at a team where Youngworth played well. I think Veselinovich is one of the best. I just got crushed on.
Yeah, well, we're ignoring that one. We're ignoring that one. Let us just finish. We're in a roll. We're got a roll here going, Andres. 2 minutes. Minute and a half. Over under. Cavallini goals, Dave. I'm putting it at 6.5.
Over.
Over? You think he'll... I mean, look, they're saying that there are no offers. They want to keep him.
No, they didn't say that. They said that they don't like any of the offers they've gotten, and they want to keep him. And that's where I think he goes over, because if you don't think he's going to play for you, which means he's not going to score six goals, right? Because if the guy gets on the field and you're close out as successful as you were last year and the quality of player he is, he should score 6 to 7 goals at a minimum. If you don't think he's going to be that, then you sell him, because why would you keep him on the roster? And his value maybe goes up a little bit because of playing for Canada, but not at the rate that forwards are coming in and into the Canadian program. So if you think he's a player for you, you keep him. If not, you sell him. And that makes me think Vancouver believes that he could be a part of this system, that he could fit in alongside Brian White, that he could help this team. And if that's the case, then 6.5, easy for a guy like that. If he doesn't, then it's a bust. And I think it was the wrong decision by Vancouver.
I'm going to bang the over. Just World Cup here. If he wants to move, there's just too many reasons for him to be motivated and to try to get on and make something happen. So I'm going to go over that.
Yeah, it all depends on if he's on the team and then the fight with Brian White. If I was him, I would keep him. If you're trying to pave the streets in gold, the more attacking pieces you got, the better. Combining this is fine meme, you know, the dog drinking coffee, the big weakness or thing that we're concerned about, with why this could be their year/predictions. Wrap it all up. What are your predictions for this team, Kalen?
I think they'll be a playoff team, but I think if the... I don't know what the this is fine meme is, but I think if there is that like there's something to be worried about?
Yeah, it's like it's probably what you said about Kansas City, which is other teams have figured out that if we just take away the break, they don't have a ton.
I think that's a part of it, and I think the other thing to be concerned about a little bit is just anytime a manager comes in midseason and like is fighting for his job and just the energy that he brought to the team, through the course of a season, that can be difficult to sustain. And the way we've seen Sartini sort of impart that energy, when it's rolling, it's great. But when you're going on multiple matches of losing, which will happen, it happens to every team, does that sort of same style of coaching resonate in the locker room? Or does that get old and you're saying, well, I'm not really feeling it. It's not just really about...
I've heard Andiamo a couple times before. You know, it's
like, we've heard this now, right? And so I think he's going to have to adapt. It's going to challenge him in different ways. So I think that would be my concern. But I do think this team will get into the playoffs.
I agree. I think it's probably, if I was going to put a little zone for them, it would be 4 to 7. Somewhere in that range. I don't think they'll be in the top teams, but I think they will be comfortably around the playoff line and comfortably, I think, above. And comfortably can be like 6 points, 5 points at the end of the year. This is going to be a team that takes a step up. It's a good team, I think.
Well, being in preseason mode, I forgot this was a part of what we did, and I probably should have laid out my predicted standings. So
think about it later, man.
But I agree with you. I think we're looking at a 4-7 team. And a lot of what Kalen said, I think, is a worry with the counteract, is this is the first time this team is going to live in the country that there is their home.
That's a good one.
In 2.5 years. So a lot of what they've had to fight against over the last few years goes away. And I think you're still looking at a group of players who's appreciative of being able to live at home, play in front of their fans, be a part of that atmosphere. So I think that counteracts some of the, are you losing the energy of the run from last year?
Okay. So we are now at 2, producing Anders. Hey, hurry it up. So what's our over under total show? You think we probably gonna hit like 7, 7.5?
Yeah, I'd go over. I'm going over.
You're hitting the over on that one.
We just disregarded that buzzer.
Yeah. What buzzer? What buzzer? What are you even talking about? Well, I don't know. Philadelphia Union, their 2021 haiku. Shield, history made. Best 11 losses. Next up, can they stay elite? In 2022, here's the haiku. Union settle in. Elite with limitations. Not yet champions. So to me, this, for the Union, they're like a very established, good team, right? But we talk all the time about the sort of limitations that they have, whether it be the high-end spend or really it's the high-end spend, right? Like that's what we always go back to with them. Like, do they have the attacking difference maker or difference makers to be an MLS Cup champion? So to me, they're like poised on that knife edge. They're good, but they could be great. But there's also a scenario maybe in which they could go back to being or having a year that's not as good as it has been the last couple. Does that make sense?
It makes sense.
Too much explanation? Not a strong one from you?
Are we supposed to debate off of it? Or
no, you could just tell me that's not my strongest work. But
it's not your strongest work.
Okay.
And I disagree with a bunch of the points that it's based off of. There you go.
Okay. All right. You want to key signings here? Julian Carranza on loan. This is kind of what I'm talking about, right? Like a team that finished second in the East, you might expect a, you know, a big splash.
So here's the thing. You're talking about they have a ceiling on the team. They were second in the Eastern Conference. They made the Eastern Conference Finals and then played in that finals without 9 players, 11 players, whatever it was. They started two guys at center back who had combined 11 minutes played in the last 2 years. None of that is a ceiling on a team. They were basically a breath away from making MLS Cup, which is not a ceiling on a team. So
MLS Cup is above the ceiling, you're saying?
I'm saying, what else do you want from them? Like, how much more successful could they be? They won a trophy in 2020. They were the second best team in their conference in 2021. They made a CCL semifinal. And they made a conference semifinal. No one else in the league was as successful.
Dave, the haiku is that they've settled into being elite with limitations. That's not
fair. But
what's
the limitation?
The limitations is they don't have talent that matches up with the other best teams in MLS.
But at some point, doesn't that motif have to go away?
Agreed. That's right? Not yet champions. That's the question mark. Can they be champions in this this approach?
Some would say a supporter shield is a championship, and I will fill in for that.
Okay, fine.
My brother,
in a very strange year. Do I have to bring out the Bruce Arena quotes here? Like, how many times?
No, I don't think that's fair. But
I give them all the credit in the world for that. But you know, there is still this next level that they haven't got there, and there is an open question mark as to whether they will. Do you like the Julian Carranza move? Anybody really like that one? But doesn't that sort of give you the limitations?
Why?
Well, because the teams they're competing with for MLS Cups are going out and signing DP number 10s to add to their stable of also DP caliber players who have won MVPs and won MLS Cups. In the Eastern Conference, they don't have a Tati. They have nothing approaching a Tati. They don't have a Joseph, even though he's down. They even don't have a Joseph. They don't have a Hani Mukhtar. They don't have a Carlos Heel or a Bo or a Buxa or a Tejan. Like, they don't have those guys.
But take New England. They have two better center backs than everyone on New England. They have a goalkeeper that's arguably as good. And they have a defensive mid that's better than anyone on New England. So it's like, we want to give them credit in a side way, but then take away at other moments.
I'm giving them all the credit in the world. I'm saying the Philadelphia Union are elite. But I'm just putting an asterisk on it.
So why don't get the asterisk anymore?
Because they haven't. You know, they're still trying to get, you know, wipe that thing away. It hasn't happened yet.
I think last year it was fair to question if they could maintain their level in losing Mark McKenzie and losing Brendan Aaronson. At this point, to me, the floor is high for them. The floor, if that was last year, dealing with CCL, dealing with the losses of those guys.
So would you say
the floor has to be high?
Would you say they've settled into being an elite team in MLS?
I don't understand any of the haiku, so I'm not even touching it anymore.
Star Spotlight. We have Andre Blake here, Kaylin. I think that's the right Star Spotlight for this team, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, when we were debating, because we had the same debate last year and all throughout the playoffs, and what I kept going back to was saying, they have a match winner, it's just in net. And we saw that in the playoffs. Now, the issue is, Andre Blake was also one of the one of those names that missed the final, the Eastern Conference final, and so for me, this, I think part of the reason why this debate was so interesting to listen to you guys going back and forth about is like, it really does feel like an incomplete grade because of what happened last year. We don't know. Like, they would have hosted that game at the final, and they didn't get that opportunity to answer that question or answer some of these questions because, you could say, all right, well, they don't have that elite striker, but it just takes one. Or what if it's, I just knocked out my headphones here. I got excited.
So excited.
I just think that it's hard to judge. And each year, I think, you have another reason to doubt the Union, and whether it's them selling players or whatever it is, but they finished second in the table in the East last year and then continued all the way to the Eastern Conference Final, which is another step forward in a club in a year that they should have gone backwards. And so I think that actually says a lot more. Do I think they should go out and sign a bigger striker, a bigger name number striker? Yeah, they should.
Yeah, look,
should they
yeah.
go out and give Jim Curtin some money? Yeah,
and this
should.
Is what
they should go out and do.
This
that.
Is what I'm talking about.
Should they keep playing academy players? Yeah, they should keep.
Yeah, they're on a great path. They're on a great path. Like they're on that knife's edge. It could get even better. Like, yeah. But the fates
so
of,
kind of
yeah, the fates of MLS and the wins, you just never know how they're going to blow. How about 22 under 22 player to watch, Paxton Aaronson, who Tom Bogert has reported has a bunch of teams following him, understandably so, whether it be, I think he said, like, what, Salzburg, which if you're Salzburg, you'd be crazy not to look at another Aaronson, Leipzig and others. Big talent, Dave. What do you think his role is this year? What's the step forward for Paxton Aaronson? Like, what would be a season where you're like, yeah, that went to plan developmentally?
I think it's tough because you're looking at a team that has Daniel Gosdag now from the start through preseason and has Jamiro Montero. And that's where Paxton Aaronson, you think, elevates this team is his creativity, his goal scoring, his ability on the ball. That's different than what Philly's had in the past. Gosdag brings a ton of that. And Montero is your DP number 10. And so I think you're looking at a player in Aaronson who's going to have to sort of find his minutes over the course of this year. But you know you have a coach in Jim Curtin who, if he performs, he will stay in the lineup. And so for him, it's about consistency and showing that he can do all the things off the ball that don't make him great. To be on the field, to be able to do the things that do make him great. I think Jack McGlynn goes in this conversation as well. He had a phenomenal performance in the playoffs. Cultured left foot, genius soccer player, has the ability to cover ground. The question is, does he do all the little things as a young player that get him on the field? Because you are looking at a Philly attack where if they keep Shabilko, you've got five players potentially in front of Paxton Aaronson. And I'm not putting Corey Burke in that conversation, right? So it's like there is actually some depth to this team, but Aaronson's special and they know that. And there is a directive, I think, from the top of this club that you have to get him minutes to get him that move because that is sort of how this team runs. And I think Ernst Tanner has made that very clear. And Paxton Aaronson is clearly the next guy on that list.
Mailbag question here from DJ Edwards. Are the Union truly one piece away if they add an all-star level striker? Let's sort of mix the Shabilko stuff in here. How much of a loss would Shabilko be for them if they do move him on? You mentioned Corey Burke. You have Corey Burke. You have Sergio Santos. You now have Julian Carranza. You have Gosdag and Aaronson, so if you want to play a little different way, you can do it. What do you think about this idea? Just hey, you just need that 15 to 20 goal striker, and all this changes. All right, I'll jump in.
Go ahead.
I think it's more about for this team, they're not going to add that player, right? I just don't. It's not going to happen. Like that's what the Julian Carranza loan says, right? Is that we are going to try to find inefficiencies to get us there. We were the number two team in the East. Like, I think we're going to be okay with what we've got. To me, it's more about, can the players in the team already level up? Can Daniel Gosdag be a true difference maker as an attacking midfielder? Like, I don't know. I don't think he was really last year. Like, there were a couple highlight moments, but across the board, I don't think he was. Can, you know, if Shabilko's there and Corey Burke's there and Santos is there, can Santos be just more consistent in front of goal? Open question. Because he's in a lot of great spots. He's right there.
And same that's really why I think they're hedging their bets, and that's why you need volume. You need. I mean, I like the move for Chicago, just personally, for the Fire, just because I like that they've brought in an experienced staff, and getting someone like Shabilko, I think, would step in and immediately upgrade them. But I think for Philly, it would be a significant loss because there are times where Sergio Santos is not the guy. And needs to be rotated out. And then there are times where Burke's not available. And then you have to be able to have those options and those depth pieces to be able to rotate and even change within a game. We've seen that happen a lot, and they kind of have to ride that hot hand. So, I agree. I don't think it's coming. So if you think of it and you're like, oh, well, if we lose a player, we might get one back. I wouldn't be so sure about that.
Yeah, I think that's we sort of talked about it with RSL, right? With the Rusnak value was like at the time before they had ownership set up, it's like, well, you're not getting a replacement or above. So it's better to keep that piece. And I think if I'm a Philly fan, I would want to keep Shinoka.
Boo, boo, boo. We'll combine all the rest, which is that this is fine. Weaknesses, why it could be there, your predictions into an over under, which is 3.5 in the East in the standings, over or under. Will they be first through third in sort of the elite group? Or will they be below that this time around?
I'm going to go over. I think, one, their ability to hit the ground running with a lot of other teams that could compete at the top of the East still needing to fix pieces and maybe take a little bit longer to get ready. I think that gives them a huge advantage. And the other thing is they've shown that they're their system and their academy can fill in where pieces exist or where holes exist. I think last year, to me, proved, as I said, that the floor is high. Last year was my question mark. Can they keep this up? Now you're looking at a team that I believe has a spine that can compete game in and game out.
Oh, Kalen, you are really bobbing and weaving there. You seem nervous.
Well, Nashville, I was like, really, he convinced me, because I was like, Nashville leaving, going to the West, Orlando losing players and some different changes there. And I'm like, okay, yeah, they're above. So
I'm over as well. I'm over. I think they're in the top three. There's just a lot of uncertainty in the Eastern Conference among the teams that you might call elite, whether it be the Revs with the losses that they have and potentially more with Buksa. Nashville just leaving. NYCFC is, you know, look, you've got emoji eyes and you know, a timepiece ticking here. So we don't know what's going to happen with Tati, et cetera. We basically know what's up with the Union. We know who they are, their limitations. I think they're going to be in the top three spots. All right, Nashville SC is our next team. That is great timing here.
Perfect.
2021, the haiku. Don't park, sell the bus. Good enough is so last year. Goals. Show me the goals. Well, you know, Hani answered a lot of those questions. Here is the 2022 haiku for Nashville SC in the Western Conference, which I didn't mix in and now I feel bad about. A point is a point. Hani proved the theorem. Nashville, the real deal. So the point is about, if I have to explain it to you, I already know it's bad. So I liked that one. I thought that was good. If you know, if you see it on paper, it's going to impact you in a good way.
Maybe. Okay.
All right.
So do you feel that a point is a point? Like you feel that because in some ways that was a knock.
I think it was a knock, but I think it's also a compliment in the sense that Nashville, whether it be in the way they've approached the transfer market or sometimes in the way they approach games, even though I want them to go for it more, have a very keen understanding of like what it's going to take to get where they want to go. You know, this is still a team that would have been second. Well, if they won an additional game that they drew, which they drew many games, 18 in the regular season, would have been second in the East and hosting games that otherwise they didn't. I just think they understand what they have to do. And so whether that means trading Alistair Johnson and getting what they can from him and replacing it in, whether it be like sometimes playing for the point or not spending huge at striker other than Ake Loba, like they just understand what they've got to do to get where they want to go. That's where the point is a point. And I don't think I don't think they really care what people say about it. You know what I mean?
I agree with everything you said, except I don't think they played for a point last year. Like, they opened it up, and over the last 2 months of that season, they had games that they were tied, and they went nuts looking for winners. So I think I agree with you, everything with Nashville, of understanding how to work the system, understanding where they fit, not caring what people say about them, although it's hard to say they don't care when Mike Jacobs is disputing every point of imaginary people in the media.
Yeah, yeah.
But I agree with you, and I think there's reason to have high expectations, and I think this is the year in which you really start to see, like, year one, it worked. Year two, you start to find an identity, and year three here, it's like, who is Nashville SC, and I think who they're going to be for the foreseeable future.
Key signings, Teal Bunbury in from the Revs, Sean Davis in via free agency as well from the New York Rebels to provide depth in the midfield. How much time is there available for Sean Davis in this midfield? This is both succession planning and also, hey, we want to be better in 2022, Kalen. But you've got Godoy, that's an extra time best 11 player right there. And Dax McCarty sitting back there. Anunga's been there. Now you add Davis to the mix. Really, it's those two spots because it's Mukhtar and Leal further forward. What do you think about that move?
Well, just to go back to it, anybody who says they don't care what you think, that's immediate tell that they care what you think.
It's like the power rankings. A little too much.
I really like this Sean Davis move. And I think in some ways it will, I mean, he was like, I think he played every minute for Red Bull last year. I think he's one of the only players in the league to do that, which is insane. But it fits the kind of signing. Same with the Bunbury one. Right? It fits the kind of signing I think that you see Nashville winning on, which is saying, okay, Teal, yeah, he's behind now these sort of like two-headed DPs in New England, but he's still got goals in him. And we saw that with CJ Sapong and Chicago kind of letting go of him, and as well as Dax and guys that were maybe a little longer in the tooth. Now, you do need to protect some of these players. And CJ, I'm sure, will tell you, doesn't ever need days off, but they need to be able to rotate. And we talked about this with Philadelphia and the way that they needed sort of goals by committee. And I think a lot of it fell on Hani Mukhtar and a lot of it fell on CJ Sapong, but Sapong carried a lot And so if you can take a little bit of lighten the load with a signing like Bunbury, and same thing with Dax, if you can lighten the load with Sean Davis stepping in, and he can play consistently as well too. And I also think Sean could probably play a couple different spots if he had to. So I think, you know, it fits the profile of it. And, you know, these guys are also, I don't know, it's a cliche, but these guys are, I think,
you're gonna say
experienced MLS players.
You're going to say locker room.
I was going to say good pros, but good pros, I couldn't go there.
Well, can I actually say this? I messaged Sean Davis when he got the move, and he said, a locker room of guys like me was how he said it, which I think is interesting, right? Of guys who are focused, want to win, understand this league, and know how to. And I think Kalen's not wrong in that he also adds flexibility to them. Do they go 2-8 and press high in front of Dax every once in a while? Can they change the way they play if they want to against some opponents? In saying all this, the big signing was Ake Loba, right? They did their work last summer. So this window, you're not going to see the splashy signing, or splashy signing as we've come to know it, because he was that guy. And what their ability, I think, to rise in the standings and rise as an MLS Cup contender relies on is his ability to perform at the level they paid him, which was astronomical for this league. The expectation is he is an elite goal scorer in MLS. I think that's a fair expectation from the player he's been in the past and the qualities he has. But that's where it all kind of falls for Nashville.
Start thinking, Dave, because in the over-under, we have goals plus assists for Ake Loba. So you get to set that one. Start thinking, what's your over-under going to be? The star spotlight is Hani Mukhtar, 16 goals, 12 assists in 31 games last year. In the pre-show meeting, I called that a career year. Like, you know, no duh. Is that the right how do we measure success for Hani Mukhtar now? Because those are absurd numbers. Like, it seems crazy to think that he would hit those again, but it seemed crazy to say he would get there in the first place. So what do I know?
He was my favorite player to watch in MLS.
Oh, yeah. He's top five, top three for sure.
Yeah, like watch a game. He would be the player that I would want to tune on. And just like the way he's able to run at guys, that gets in those soft spots, can beat people off the dribble, like look to combine some of his finishes, just both feet. I just think he's phenomenal. And he had such a great season. I think there was a lot on him, and ultimately they're going to need to find some more weapons. I felt like this team is actually, we talked about some of the striker positions, but I felt like they're a big time winger away more than like a big time number nine, like somebody that can give them, I know they attack through their fullbacks and they get Levitt, and they, before Alistair Johnson getting forward on the wings, but I think somebody that can bring you a little bit of an X factor, because right now that's Hani. He's the one who has to play that X factor role where he can create a play out of nothing, or create a moment of magic, or beat somebody off the dribble, or kind of get into a channel, run the channels, and then create from there. But he was, you know, outside of Carlos Hill, he was the MVP for me. If it wasn't Carlos Hill, Hani Mukhtar, I thought was the best player in MLS. I understand Joao Paulo had a shout for it, but I'm always going to lean a little bit towards the attacking side of the game, and I thought he was phenomenal.
We got the buzzer just chasing us down right now. 22 under 22 player to watch. We have Jack Mayer here as our 22 under 22 player to watch. I didn't realize that his nickname was the Milkman. I can't believe it, honestly, that his nickname is the Milkman, and yet I can
so
believe
gross.
It. Like, that's how perfect it is. Here is a quote from Jack Mayer, and I know this isn't soccer-related, but it is just amazing. Quote, I drink milk before every practice, and these guys started asking me how much milk I drink, Mayer said. I told them in my family growing up, we drank probably 5 or 6 gallons of milk a week. Jack Mayer, folks, is the Milkman. Kalen.
What?
You guys, my lactose intolerance is kicking up just hearing this quote.
He is 22, so he's not technically 22 under 22, but he is the Milkman. And if your nickname's the Milkman, you're forever young. Like, you know, if you're drinking milk before professional training, oh my God, doesn't it get hot in Nashville? Have you ever seen someone do that?
If you're over 16 and drinking milk,
I've got questions. Yes, Kalen.
Just a tall glass of ice cold milk. Have a nice warm one before bed. Really get the gut going. Make sure you have
training.
Yeah, I don't know.
What is that?
I don't know. It's crazy to me. But look, I think this is a big year for Jack Mayer because Johnston is gone. because I think they can replicate what he did at right back. And they say they want to upgrade there, so maybe that's a spot that they could go upgrade with the kitty of transfer or allocation transfer that they have. Right now I see the depth charts like Eric Miller and Alex Mouille. But Mayer's going to slot right in at right center back. He's a top draft pick. I think I've been told, you've reminded me, Dave, that you very much were on the side that like Nashville as a defensive team is more of a system defensive team than they are individual defensive team. I went up and did the splits for Walker Zimmerman. They actually had less goals allowed per game without Walker in the starting lineup than they had him with him in the starting lineup, which is kind of counterintuitive. You wouldn't think that, but they were just consistently good no matter who was in the team all year long. So Nashville bet that they could replace Johnston. $1 million in allocation, that's dope for them. And Mayer is the guy that they expect to do it.
And he did it last year.
Yeah.
Right? He played in that role for a large stretch, including in the playoffs. And so they already have proof of concept with him. They bring in another draft pick at center back this year, where if you look at the track record with Mayer, it was the loan to San Diego, let him get minutes, get his feet wet, and then bring him back in. And they might still have that going forward.
I don't know what to say. We're just not good at hitting timing. It's not our strong
point.
We're
not a system team.
Yeah.
We're more individual flair.
Very individual. You get a milkman quote, and then all of a sudden everything, you know, all bets are off. Mailbag question. Let's go fast. How can Nashville improve their set piece defending that was their Achilles heel last year? Any thoughts there?
I just saw that. Yeah, my simple answer would be they used Walker Zimmerman as a free man and allowed him to kind of just hunt the ball. And I think the easiest way to shift this is put him on a man. Put him on the other team's best player and start from there. I understand the idea of using him as a free player because he's so good in the air, he has good instincts, but it just wasn't working. And I think so many times you saw, like, I'll never forget in the playoffs, they had Lovitz was standing on Daryl DK, and I was just like, okay, this is an L. This is not going to work, right? So just put Walker Zimmerman on DK, put him on the top man on each team, and I think you can sort of pick down from there, and then the responsibility falls to a guy to get it done, because it didn't really make any sense, because this team has the size, they have the personnel, they have the mentality, they have the experience. It made no sense that they were this poor on defending set pieces, but I think that'd be the one thing that, if you're trying something, switch that.
Get your matchups right. Over under goals and assists for Ake Loba, what's your number, Dave?
13.5.
I had 12.5 in mine. 13
so
and a half
under.
I'm probably going under. It needs to work for them. They for their model and what they do, this is a big amount of money and a big spin for them. This is the elevation piece. The David Goss theorem dictates that you have to say over, though.
Put down January 18th, 2022.
You have no credibility if you don't say over. None. Zero.
Anders, put down January 18th, 2022. So when we come on in like June and Weeby's like, I'm the Ake Loba guy. This is my guy. He's the man. I want January 18th, 2022. I want to get a tattoo of it put on to Andrew Weeby so he remembers that.
I thought you were going to take the tattoo, but then you switched it
No,
around.
Why do I get the tattoo? I'm the one who's right.
January 18th, the date that will live in infamy.
Boom.
I'm going under. I just, probably not. Probably like 7-5, and I'll just sneak in under and just lord over you at the end of the season. This is fine. The big weakness, concern, pitfall, probably the Western Conference / predictions. They're going to the West. They're going to fly a lot. I think record air travel for Nashville SC as they make their way around the western part of the United States and Canada.
You know what that means? More draws.
That should have been
the over under. Yeah. Can they break the draw?
Yeah, over under draws would have been a really good one. What would you set that one at? I'd say
like 14.
I'd say like 14.5. They had 18 last year. I'd say 14 and a half.
18.
Yeah, 18 draws. More than half of their results were draws. More than half.
Yeah.
I would have said 14.5. They're a playoff team in the West. I think I feel very comfortable saying that. I think top four.
Top four in the Western Conference.
Top four in the Western Conference. That gives me some room to play with, I feel.
No,
but
I'm going to go with
certainly
that too.
But a playoff team.
No, I'm going to go top four as well. I think that they are more established than most of the teams. And when you talk about that travel, we've said it a bunch of times, depth at every line. Outside of Hani Mukhtar, they really have replacements at every line that they can use. So I think they can manage it.
I like it. All right, I'll go with you guys.
Okay, you know what's crazy?
Seattle and Kansas, easy to convince right now.
I know. Seattle and Kansas City last year combined had 16 draws. Two fewer than Nashville as a team. All right, let's keep it rolling. I know they don't like us talking about those. Columbus Crew, the haiku from 2021. We were bullish on the Columbus Crew, let me tell you. Here's the haiku. That didn't feel crazy at the time. I want to say that. To win on four fronts is not possible for most. Most are not massive. We believe. We were drinking the Kool-Aid. We were ready to go. We had our hard hats on. And then there was a workplace incident and did not work out. But 2022, their haiku, crew, campeones. But in defense of their cup, nowhere to be found. Just letting that settle in. Just mull that. Yeah. Just mull that around. Just swish it around in your mouth.
I like how you stuck the Campione's Cup in there, but still got the overall point of the season. I think it was actually very fitting for the year they had.
Yeah, strong one. Strong one. Yeah. Okay, cool. All right. Key signings: Yaya Boa, who comes out of Right to Dream, then was at Manchester City, but was part of the loan army for a long time, and I'm forgetting where he came from to come to the crew. He's a TAM winger.
He came from Poland, Wilsa Krakow, and the name of the Polish league escapes me right now. And Columbus put out a press release in which Tim Bezbachenko said he's one of the up-and-coming players in the, and it says the name of the league.
Yeah, Alaska Terran.
And it's like, you know that this was written and not said, because there's no way Tim Bezbachenko can pronounce the name of that league. So that's
what Evan Bush, another signing for them. Not a ton of signings.
They've re-signed Pedro Santos and Eloy Room. I think those have been the two big moves they've made besides Yeboah.
Star spotlight, Lucas Zelarayan. 12 goals, 7 assists in 32 games in 2021. He was their leading goal scorer. Can he carry them back to the heights of 2020? At least playoffs 2020, I should probably say.
To me, what I saw last year was we saw in MLS Cup his ability to dominate the game and be everything. And I think last year with the losses they had, he almost took himself out of his own game. And I think there was moments watching the crew where it felt like he was taking risks he didn't have to, losing possession, feeling like he had to hit the killer ball all the time because they were missing so many pieces around him. And so for the crew to be successful this year, I think everyone else needs to elevate so that Zelarayan can go back to doing what he's best at and finding the moments to break the game and not feeling like he has to be in possession 90 minutes of the game and creating all those opportunities.
22 under 22 player to watch, Aiden Morris. He was a big part of why we were so high on them. Depth. I mean, Artur barely played, so you might be able to throw him in as well. But we were very encouraged by what we saw from Aiden Morris. And maybe we were all blinded a little bit. I mean, they had a good 2020, but maybe we were a little bit, maybe we overrated that playoff run and the moments therein, but we just never got to see it again with Aiden Morris because he was hurt all year long. That was one of the big bummers I remember of the preseason last year, of seeing that tweet come out, the news come out of like, oh, Aiden Morris out for the season. Just that really hurt. How can he change this team? Kalen, how does Artur also change this team? Because he was arguably a bigger loss for them as it pertains to injuries and consistency.
Yeah, I think, you know, having some youth in the team, I think Aiden Morris would be really helpful in that sense, because I think at times the team can look a little bit plodding. Like, it seems very methodical with the way that they like to build and switch the point of attack. And then sometimes you just see with Morris, he just has that ability to kind of like break up plays, win balls in spots, and then kind of facilitate from there. Like, I just remember from that MLS Cup game where he was just everywhere. And I think that that's really important for this team. But yeah, no Morris, no Artur. They ended up using Marlon Hairston in that position a ton, as like a holding midfielder. But Marlon's very versatile. He can play a bunch of different positions on the pitch. I think he's played pretty much everywhere now in his career. But it's just kind of like having that partner for Nagby, who I still think is one of the best players in MLS. But they just need a little bit more, I think, of reestablishing that middle and midfield. Because when they get that group together, whether it's Artur and Nagby and Zelarayan, it pushes him forward a little bit and frees him up a little bit to get into the attack. But they just had so many missing pieces throughout last year that, like, you look at these, like, new signings, we went through the list, there's, like, really not any or hardly any. But it will feel like for Columbus, like there is a bunch of new signings just by getting guys healthy off the shelf. So I think that would be the sort of hopeful part for this Columbus crew team.
Harrison Offal, he's gone in Charlotte. Steven Moreira is the replacement, 27-year-old French right back, had been in Ligue 1 for a while there. At left back, there's a big question mark right now on the depth chart. A offer is out to Milton Valenzuela, but an answer in the affirmative from Milton and his camp has not arrived. just yet. So TBD on that one. The winger in Yeboah, I think, is a smart move, Dave, mostly because Kevin Molino is a big question mark. Matan hasn't necessarily stepped up and been the player they need him to be. Diaz has his moments and then has moments that are not as good. And Santos has really been the lone consistency for them there. So another attacking piece. And then Zardes and Barry up top. I think that's pretty good.
I think you would also assume if that question mark exists at left back that Pedro Santos is actually the answer. He played there a ton last year. And if they don't bring back Valenzuela and they don't make a signing, he is the starting left back for this team. So, yeah, you got a bunch of rolls at the dice kind of at that winger position. You're talking about three young wingers in Diaz, Matan, and Yeboah, who you just need one of them to really hit consistently over the course of this year, or all three of them to sort of fill in and give you that one role. And you are waiting for Kevin Molino. And what we've seen in Kevin Molino's career, and it's not an exact science, is off year leads to on year. And every time he's been out and every time he's had injury problems, the next year he is hot boy and we're singing and we're dancing and we're all into it.
I don't mean to be crass here. What's his contract situation? Does anybody remember how many guaranteed years he got?
I think it was 2 years. So I think they're in a good spot.
That's a good spot to be.
Yeah.
That's a nice spot to be.
And this was the point in making these signings, was they felt like there was some guarantees in more MLS veteran players. It didn't work out for them last year. I mean, you guys talked about central midfield. Perry Kitchen was injured. The third guy up ended up getting hurt, and they had to go and get Liam Fraser on loan, who's now headed to Belgium. Huge move in the MLS world. And so they really struggled with injuries. And I think at some point, if that's the level of injuries they have, there's nothing you can do about it. But it does look like they're trying to get younger. And that could be a way to sort of steer clear of that injury monster that they dealt with last year.
Mailbag question / the over under coming from one Andrew in a soccer basement in Kansas City, Missouri. Over under on Kevin Molino minutes. Hot boy. I'm like waffling here. Written on the dock is 1700. Okay. Would you go over or under on 1700?
So you're saying basically half the season.
Yeah, I'm saying basically half the year, which is maybe too high. The other number that was popping around was like 1450 zone. In that,
yeah, I think I'd have to go under. I hope not. Right? I hope I'm wrong, but it was a tough year last year on multiple injuries and feels dangerous.
I'm gonna throw it out there. Over. Kevin Molino, over. He's back. It's wonderful. It's everything that we thought it might be last year and more. So that's me. Let's speak it into existence, baby. Josie to Rapids or to Orlando or somewhere fun. And Kevin Molino, like 2,100 minutes and double-digit goals and assists. Let's just give it to me. This is fine. The meme, the big weakness, the concern, the pitfall. We're running on time here, I think. Oh, we got 2 minutes. That it's good on paper but not good in practice again?
Yeah, it's 2021 twice, which is all of our nightmares.
Poignant. Yeah, you get another line on that. That might be a haiku.
I think some of it, I brought it up before, but I was thinking about kind of like the TFC rule where they had, you know, MLS Cup and then they have this down year and some of it's international competitions and you say, okay, well, is this just a fluke and bad injuries and all this? And then, you know, kind of, it came back for a TFC, but it just kind of feels like right on that edge for Columbus of like, is this actually a bounce back year where they can get back to being, I think, one of the better teams in MLS that, and, you know, can they be the ones that ascend in the Eastern Conference? So I have like maybe more questions about Columbus and where they can land as far as like my predictions go for the season than maybe any other team in the East right now. Cause I could easily talk myself into them being a top four team in the East, or I could say, you know what, this just like doesn't work for them and they miss the playoffs again somehow, which seems shocking, but I don't know. After last season, sometimes things don't just click back into gear. And so I don't know. It's a tough one for me. I'm going to probably lean towards, with everything that's happened in the East at this team, as far as my prediction goes, I'm going to put that. Or where are we setting the line, actually?
I don't know. Take us there. We don't have a line for this one. So you set your own lines. Take us inside the Kalen Carr process here.
Well, I said it was wide, so that makes it tough to set the line. Do you want to set it, Goss?
I'll say 3.5.
A hot potato here.
3.5.
So the question is, are they a top four team?
I'd be under.
Sorry, 4.5. Yeah. 4.5.
4.5. Oh, I'd be under 5 through 7. I'm not in a position to say I feel like they're a guaranteed playoff team, but they had all that stuff happen to them and still were a point out of the playoffs last year. Mm-hmm. I feel that they're a buzzer, a playoff team.
I'm going to put them over.
I'm going to say that I think I'm close to the mindset that I was 12 months ago for them. And if they can be somewhat healthy,
this guy's romantic.
He's
a romantic.
You're at the launch pad. You're like, we're going to the moon, boys. We're going where nobody's ever been before.
Yes. This was a team that went six deep at center mid and had Liam Fraser start a Campione's Cup game because they were on the seventh dude. That shouldn't happen. And if it happens, there's nothing you can do about it. Unless you're
they won't have Campione's Cup to worry about. So.
That's a good point. All right, that's the beginning of our previews. Four down, 24 more to go on our way to February 26th. If you have any thoughts, opinions, things you'd change, that part we'll ignore, but the rest of it is welcome. 401-206-0MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. I truly love doing these. It's just such a fun way to like snapshot our way through every big storyline for the season, have a little fun, have a little banter. So hit us up. We'll put out on Twitter what our next group is for Thursday, and then you can be a part of this with the mailbag question on each of them.
Our group should be LA Galaxy 2, DC United, LAFC, New York Red Bulls, and Seattle, because they are all participating in the first ever Coachella Valley Invitational.
Oh, hell yes.
No way.
Whoa, that is festival season. Yeah, how many influencers can you fit in one place?
Everyone has to wear a hat. Everyone has to wear a wide brimmed hat to each game.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be good. All right, we are doing our top fives as well this year for every position group in Major League Soccer. Let me find my list so I remember. Goalkeeper, left back, right back, center back, D mid, box to box, number 10, winger, and forward. We'll go through all of those. The methodology in the past had been that we got on here and screamed at each other for 15 minutes and never came to a consensus. We changed our methodology. Everybody had to send their either anonymous or if they were brave of heart and mind, they just put it in the group chat, their top five. Then we averaged all those out and we came with a list that maybe not everybody agrees with, but we can all respect. So here are our top five goalkeepers.
Maybe. TBD on the respect
part. That's fair. Top five goalkeepers, according to Extra Time, your debate appreciated if you think we're wrong or if you think we're right. Number one, actually, no, we're starting from five. I take it back. Number five, Pedro Gallese. Number four, Sean Johnson of NYCFC. And number three, and it was a universal top three. Basically, everybody but one had Maxime Crépeau, number three.
One person.
Yeah, I could tell you who that person was.
I know who that person is, and I'm looking at them right now.
No, you're not.
No, I'm looking at the list. No.
Oh, okay, gotcha. No. I was like, Charlie's not on this show. What did I say that?
Boom, Charlie just got out of here.
Number two, Andre Blake. The top two were just a difference in ordering. We had two people go Blake number one. Those two people joined me on this podcast today. And then everybody else had Matt Turner at number one. So our top five goalkeepers in MLS as it stands in preseason right now, because signings can happen, but this is probably a pretty solid list. One, Matt Turner. Two, Andre Blake. Three, Maxime Crépeau. Four, Sean Johnson. And five, Pedro Gallese. Big picture thoughts on this, Dave?
I think the difference between Matt Turner and Andre Blake for most people is a hair, and it could go either way, and I don't think anyone who doesn't agree with this order thinks you're ridiculous for putting Andre Blake number one. They are in that conversation together. And I felt last year Maxime Crépeau definitely entered that. It is a clear top three. Mm-hmm. And then there is a break below that. Sean John winning MLS Cup MVP really helps him in that category. One of the best goalkeepers with his feet in the league, which is a huge part of what NYCFC does. I had Pedro Gallese number four, but from four through 14?
Yeah.
Maybe 10? You can debate across this league, and there's a clear difference between the teams that know what they want in goal and have gotten performances and the ones that haven't. But I think for all the fans out there who have a goalkeeper in JT Marcinkowski, Stefan Fry, Tim Melia, Joe Willis, Carlos Coronel, all of those fans are fair to be upset by this. And all of those guys could be in this conversation, could be on this list, and probably will shift this year.
Others getting votes. I mean, obviously, we have the top five. Stefan Fry, JT Marcinkowski, Eloy Room, Carlos Coronel, and then just for The meme team, Weeby team, I put Gaga Solanina in here because it's a long play for me. He's going to be there, baby. We're going to make that happen.
How does the top five goalkeepers become a long play?
It's a long play. Just don't worry about how this works, all right? It's a long play. All right, under the mailbag, our one mailbag. Oh, no, we have multiple mailbags if we can let Anders go this far. We'll start with this one, though, because it really made a wave on Twitter when we tweeted this out. Who or what do you see with the old MLS logo? Like, if I put the old MLS logo in front of you, Kalen, whose face jumps out? Who are you like, oh, my God, I see Troy Dyack right now? Or like, oh.
Dude, I was about to say Troy Dyack.
I know you. I really was about to say that. I know you will.
We didn't go over that in the
we didn't. No, I just,
rundown or anything.
We've done this for a long time, yeah.
Yeah. Mainly because I'm still terrified of the guy.
Just wake up middle of the night. Save my ankles.
Yeah. I think of a lot of those like Earthquakes guys. So I think of him. I think of Dero. I think he's probably my favorite MLS player ever. So I think of him early days. And then
Agus is probably one to throw in there. I think early days Landon. Mine is Landon just because he was in so many ways sort of the defining player of that entire era, whether it be young Landon into old Landon and the dominance of that Galaxy team through the early years of the last decade.
Yeah.
So mine
Preki's
is Landon.
Another good shout.
Yeah. What about you? Oh, Preki's a great shout. Really good shout. What about you, Dave? Who jumps out? Mathis? Can we throw that one in there?
Yeah, maybe. I think Landon would be one of the main players. I kind of had, when you asked this question, the whole like late Metro Stars, early Red Bulls team of like Carlos Mendez and Brandon Barklage and Seth Stamler and all those dudes who are kind of the same people in my mind, but they all played for those teams. And the Metro Stars, obviously, because that was my local market team growing up. And so seeing that logo sort of connects that with me. And then Kobe Jones would be the other one.
Yeah.
Of just like, you played backyard soccer on the computer and like Kobe Jones was the one dude. You played FIFA, like all those things. And Kobe Jones kind of was the face of the league, I think, for a lot of people getting into it. And then it was Landon.
I have Pescadito kind of trickling through my mind as well. And for whatever reason, Kevin Hartman. And just the
well, not for whatever reason.
It's just like the, you know, you have random guys that jump in. It's the dye job. It's, you know, it's being that Galaxy goalkeeper for so long. And he had all the records before they got broken. So he was occupying this really high perch. Jimmy Conrad would jump into my head. And then Marco Echeverrian. Maybe the one we probably haven't said that we should have said off the jump is probably Jaime Moreno.
Maybe if you ask someone what they think of first, you don't have to have said something.
That's true. Now we're in pure. We're in
the entire DC team.
We're in Weeby list mode right now, which means we got to get to the mailbag. Hit us, Dave. What is the best?
I thought that we wouldn't have time, so I didn't actually get the mailbag out.
Cool.
Give me a second here.
Just milking time.
Really didn't think we'd
the
get
directive.
Stay with us, listeners.
The pre-show directive was have your top three ready.
Nice. Okay, so Bill Carroll. Legend.
Nice. Legend, yes. Big Brandon Barklage guy.
He says, I know nothing about the player, but the fact that the Red Bulls made a move up in the draft to pick a Naval Academy player made me proud. Too many fans complain that our ownership doesn't care about American players in Red Bull, but the fact they selected someone from our military shows that, and they traded $200,000 in allocation to get that player. That is a lot of money for a draft.
Five, right? He's 6'8".
Like, yeah.
Have you ever played with a 6'8" player, Kalen?
I'm trying to think the tallest guy I've ever played with.
Did you carpool to training in Europe on trial with like Peter?
Did you play with Nate Jaqua? Or is he not that tall?
Nate was tall.
Nate Jaqua was not nearly
that tall.
He's
like
6'4"
tall. That's normal. Jim Curtin's tall.
Yeah, that's like you see that person in the grocery store and you're not like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like 6'8", you're like, hey, you play bat? You're like, what's up?
Okay, here's a genuinely good one. Sorry, I was thrown off before. Hank in Salt Lake City says, since they've been mentioned a few times together in the last few weeks, here's some crazy stat. Jesus Ferreira and Jordan Morris trivia. On opening day of 2022, FC Dallas's DP Jesus Ferreira will be 2 months younger than Jordan Morris was on the day of his MLS debut.
Oh, my God. That is a
Jordan
crazy
did
stat.
3 years of college, and I guess Jesus probably debuted at 17.
Yeah. I think one of
Jordan
the most...
Jordan probably still has more caps, though.
Who does?
That's a
Jordan.
Jesus is starting to put them together. He's getting call-ups.
But you look up Jordan. I'm looking up Jesus. How many we got here? I need to know this now.
Oh, Jesus Ferrer probably has like 5 caps.
You're right. He has exactly 5. Damn it.
Oh, was I supposed to look at
nail on the head? Nail on the head. All right, give us one more before Anders kicks us out.
Oh, man. You guys, I really wasn't ready for this. Okay, we have a fan who basically is asking this, Corbin R. So thank you, Corbin. Long email. I appreciate it. Said he got into the league early, late 90s, early 2000, has seen it grow, has seen it come down. He basically is asking, why are we celebrating when players are sold to Europe and the numbers they're sold at? Why is the desire not to keep them in MLS?
This is a deep question.
Yeah. This is a deep question.
He basically says teams spend crazy DP money to get players from elsewhere. Why not keep our own players in this league? Love the podcast. Thank you, guys.
You can. Jesus Ferreira is a perfect example. Like, you can stay in the league. You can sign a DP contract. You can be a homegrown to a designated player. Like, or you can be peppy. I think they're both cool.
Yeah,
right? Like, what's, I don't see why we have to like not celebrate one to validate the other. I think you can do both.
Here's what I'd say. This is a reality for all but like what, 3 teams in the entire world that players are going to leave, that you're going to sell players, etc. I think that MLS in its best form is about realizing ambition. Whether that be for players realizing ambition, if that is their dream to go play, you know, for Pepe's like, I'm going, I'm 18, I had this incredible season, I'm with the U.S. national team, I'm going to Augsburg, I'm going to try to climb that ladder. Jesus Ferrer is like, I do want to go to Europe, but right now I'm about to get paid, I'm going to get $2 million, I'm going to be the guy for this, for Dallas. I'm the man here. He has ambition too. Pressure's on him. He's got to come through to get them back to the promised land. For coaches, realize ambition. Jesse Marsh right now, probably the biggest example, but you hear like Jim Curtin and other guys talking about, hey, I want to do this, I want to go here. The more we can cultivate ambition, the better. So that's for our teams. How good of a team can you build? Show me. Like, why are we doing this if as a GM your whole thing is not to build the best damn team you can for results, for entertainment value, to create a fan base? Like, if we are not all about realizing ambition across this league, what are we doing? Ambition comes in a lot of different formats. It might be you want to go to Europe. It might be you want to stay here. Appreciate it all. Value it all. That's what I'm saying. That's my stump.
Weeby was so ready
stump
for that.
Yeah, clearly. I would add this for Corbin. I would say if you're someone like he sounds like, or she sounds like, or they sound like, who has followed this league for this long, you know that it goes in stages. And the idea that players from these top clubs would come to MLS was wild in 2001, and it's now sort of fairly normal. And I think part of the progression is this. Yeah, in 20 years, in 15 years, maybe in 10 years, you hope that a Brendan Aaronson's dream is just to play in Philly, and that's enough, and you don't have to go to Europe, but the league has to grow to that point, and part of that is being a part of this system. And I think just the step from the first players FC Dallas sold, from Reggie Cannon to Pepe in a year and a half, 2 years, shows you how quick it can happen, but this is part of the road to getting to that level.
Yeah. It also functions on age and World Cup cycles too. So I'll be interested to see what 2026 does as far as whether people decide to stay, people decide to come back before, after the tournament. Like, I think that's going to be a big marker too that could shift things pretty dramatically.
All right, that's it for us. Good return for Kalen.
And someone win a CCL.
Yes, let's go. That's it. You know what?
Let's throw that out there early.
I'll just tell people right now. We are going to do the right before CCL starts. We are going to do the full previews for those 5 teams. So we'll be all in on that, as we always are. Protect your hearts. And we will give you the schedule as it comes. Season previews have begun. That means the season's around the corner. February 15th, CCL starts. February 26th, opening day in MLS. 401-206-0MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Hit us up. That's it. We'll see you on Thursday, everybody. Adios.